Imagine if a ring could actually give you the power of insight into your own health. The Oura Ring is a real-world ring of power, designed to help you take control of your well-being. I've worn an Oura Ring every day for years, and it's truly become essential. Now with the brand new Oura Ring 4, this smart ring goes even further. It doesn't just track steps, it reveals insights about your sleep, activity, recovery, stress, and more, all literally at your fingertips. Paired with an Oura membership, it's like having a powerful personal wellness guide on your finger, giving you the power to be healthier every day. Claim this ring of power for yourself. Visit ringspodcast.com/ring and order your Oura Ring 4 today. That's ringspodcast.com/ring to claim your Oura Ring of Power. At the heart of the Lord of the Rings lies the enduring theme of friendship, beautifully embodied by Frodo and Sam as they journey through Mordor to Mount Doom. Today, I'm joined by two modern adventurers who, inspired by that very bond, set out to recreate an adventure of their own. For 3 days and two nights, they hiked with the same gear, clothing, bedding, and even swords that Frodo and Sam would have used. Join me, Aaron, your host and guide to Middle-earth, as we explore their Middle-earth-inspired trek and the friendship that carried them through. Andrew and Bepe, welcome to Lore of the Rings, and thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Aaron.
So go back to the moment that inspired, you guys were probably talking it out. What inspired this trek? Tell us the story.
Man, I think I can't remember the exact, I guess, date. I can kind of remember the night that the idea came to me when I was just, you know, kind of bantering with some friends about something. I think one of our good friends had just finished up the Continental Divide Trail, and we were just kind of talking about the absurdity of doing through hikes. And both Andrew and I do a lot outside, both climb, ski. We were both river guides for a long time, but neither of us are really, I think, self-identified backpackers at all. And so I was probably, you know, giving a little grief to my friend here for his adventure, and then started thinking about how really the ultimate way to do a thru hike is in the style of Sam and Frodo, who in my mind are the original thru hikers. And I think once that kind of seed was planted, I knew that I had to do it with Andrew. And so I sent him a text, and, you know, Andrew is typically on board for all my bad ideas. So I don't think he really gave much pushback, and it just quickly became okay, we should probably actually do this thing.
Yeah. Andrew, what was your initial reaction when you get that text? Like, hey, let's go walk like Sam and Frodo barefoot across the mountain. Did you even go barefoot? Maybe I should ask that question.
We didn't go barefoot.
Okay.
Yeah. And we can definitely go into that more. That's been the number one thing we've received flack for, was not going barefoot, but I think we had pretty good reasons and logic behind it. But I think initially, I mean, Bepe and I have been friends for over 10 years now, and sort of at the core of our friendship has been ridiculous bits. And usually they, you know, it's just things that entertain us, and are silly, and typically remind people to, or we hope, remind people not to take things too seriously. And we have had a lot of kind of silly ideas over the years, and most of them haven't happened. But this one felt like, okay, this is actually something I could see us doing, and it would be just a really great adventure to have with my best friend, you know, to go and hike this amazing trail and have this great experience, and also just do it in this way that would push us a little bit, but in a way that we're not used to.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about what that experience was like. You said it would push you a little bit in ways that you were not used to. Like, what made this particular trek different than all the others that you had ever done?
Well, the obvious answer is the gear. And I think, you know, I'll let Bepe speak more to this because it was sort of his initial idea. But, you know, we weren't trying to set out to recreate their journey exactly. It's not like we walked the mileage they did. We were more interested in the day-to-day life of Frodo and Sam. So much of the book and the movies really just hits on the key moments of their journey where something important happens. But, you know, it was a year or over a year that it took for them to do this whole trip. And so there are lots of days that we don't get where they just wake up, have breakfast, walk for a little bit, you know, stop, have lunch. And so we were like, what were those days like? What were the little things that would have been really annoying to Frodo and Sam, or actually not as bad as you would imagine they would be? And so that was what we were interested in. And the challenge we knew, or at least I knew for me, was going to be, you know, what is it like to sleep up high in the mountains in the end of summer with no sleeping bag, no tent, no sleeping pad? So that was it for me, for sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all of those things are true. And also, like, every time I would think about us doing this, it just made me laugh. And so, and the parts that made me laugh were, like, you know, that Sam is carrying two cast iron pans and a big, like, pot, and that he has a backpack with no hip straps, and just all these things that, like, no one goes that way anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of those all made me laugh. And so I wanted to make sure that we had those parts. And I think in terms of, like, how it differed from other things we've done, I've had a lot of bad nights of sleep outside. Andrew and I both used to guide multi-day river trips, and it kind of just became this thing where we wouldn't bring a tent with us for whatever reason. It was like almost a point of pride for the guides to not do that. And it rained a lot. This was in Idaho in the summers, and there's a lot of thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. And so you spend a lot of wet nights, but you always have a pad that you're sleeping on. And so I honestly didn't think that the sleeping was going to be that bad, because I figured we'd be able to find some loamy dirt somewhere. Most of the Tetons, for those that are unfamiliar, it's mostly granite and limestone. So a lot of the actual path that you're walking on is hard rocks or large, sharp pebbles. But I kind of figured we'd find somewhere soft to sleep if we searched hard enough. And that was not the case. It was really terrible sleeping conditions. No. And as uncomfortable as both of our backpacks were, that ended up not being the crux at all. It was totally a sleeping.
Wow, this is amazing. Both of you brought up the sleeping outside in the mountains with only a blanket on rocks, couldn't find a soft space. Like, I remember there's this scene in the movie where Sam and Frodo are still in the Shire, even. They're just in the Shire, and Sam's like, man, everywhere I roll over, there's a root in my back. You know, I'm never going to sleep. And Frodo's like, yeah, me neither, because you're going to keep me up all night. Like, did you kind of experience that? Did you even sleep at all? Or were you just kind of like, I guess we're just going to stare at the stars for a few hours?
We did sleep.
Yeah, we did. But I would say over, you know, we spent two nights out there. And it was over the course of those two nights, I bet I slept a total of 9 hours in 30-minute increments, it felt like. So it was really bad. And that was our major reflection on the thing, on the actual Lord of the Rings journey, is, like, Frodo and Sam, it doesn't really get talked about ever. But they must have been so sleep-deprived from the beginning. It would have been really hard to do what they did and sleep in that style, especially, it's not like the sleeping got better as they went along. Like, I think it got way worse.
They might get so tired that they're able to do it, but we didn't reach that point. I actually, you know, we certainly made some exceptions on the gear list to, you know, I guess modern conveniences, in that we wore shoes. I also had an Aura ring on, so kind of, you know, the modern day equivalent of a magical ring, although it doesn't grant me that many powers. So I was able to track my sleep because I was curious what that was going to actually look like. And it was pretty much exactly what Andrew said. It was all in 30 minutes or less increments. And kind of the problem for us, we hit the time of year, end of August. It was just cold enough that you couldn't really be warm enough to, like, sleep on your back or really spread out your weight across all the uncomfortable things you're on. And so you had to be curled up in order to stay warm enough. And then you were just really uncomfortable.
That's the time of year where it's just, you don't know if it's warm, you don't know if it's cold. And honestly, it's about this time of year where I think Sam and Frodo probably were going through Mordor. Scratch that. That was in March. So getting my lore mixed up there. But
we had all the weather. We, like, you know, it hailstormed on us. It rained. We really got to test out our cloaks' waterproofness. It turns out wool is an incredible material. All of our dads weren't lying to us about that.
Well, that's good. At least you were able to stay dry a little bit. Yeah, there's a few scenes from the film and the books where everybody gets wet. Even rain gets into the food. So what did you eat? I think you carried some lembas bread with you. What counted for lembas bread? What did you eat?
I'll let you answer that, Bep, since you found it.
Yeah, I found...
Found it! Oh, no. Okay.
Well, I kind of... We didn't think that we were... You know, obviously, we did this in 3 days, and we kind of loosely, even though we weren't trying to recreate their journey perfectly, we did want to kind of experience all the different aspects of it. So we tried to, over the first day, you know, actually eat foods that they would have with them at the beginning of their journey. So we had potatoes, we had bacon, we had some eggs, we had some bread and nice crispy sausages. And so we ate actually all right the first day. The first night we made ourselves a like vegetable stew. We really like dove into what they actually had and tried to have a representative of each of those foods or food groups. The lembas bread, though, I thought a lot about, and I was like, okay, we do need to survive off of this thing. And so I just need to find the most calorie dense food that I can. And there's this company, it's called like Grizzly Nutrition or something like that. And they make these survival bars that are basically marketed for doomsday preppers. And so they are like shelf stable for way too long and come in these sealed packages. And each one of them is like 400 calories. And they're just like this dense little wafer brick. And they kind of looked like lembas bread. So it was the perfect thing. And I ordered them on Amazon. And that's what we ate from the second half of the second day all the way until the end.
What did it taste like, Andrew?
The ones we ordered were a sort of lemon flavor. Like if you've ever had the lemon Luna bar, it was similar to that, but way denser. I just remember when I showed up in Jackson to do the trek, Beppe hadn't opened the package from Amazon yet. And he's like, feel this. And it was just this little package of 9 bars. And it weighed so much more than that amount of food should have weighed. And I was really not looking forward to that part. I thought for sure the lemba spread was going to be just so bad. And we were carrying it and eating this pretty nice food. And then it was time to switch over. And I was like, oh God, this is going to just make this so much worse. And it actually wasn't that bad.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
When fandom is about community, so are we. Whether you're watching blockbuster fantasy like The Lord of the Rings or cozying up with your favorite comic book, the Lorehounds are here as your guides to great stories. Search for the Lorehounds in any podcast feed or head to our website, thelorehounds.com, to find links to all our conversations, whether on air or with listeners on our Discord server. See you this fall for weekly coverage of Dune Prophecy and Silo.
Okay. I would definitely bring it again on something like this, just as like I need food.
Yeah.
You could feel it warm you up. It was like very so calorie rich. At night, you'd eat some and you'd be like, oh, I'm warmer now from the lemba spread.
Yeah, the first bite was a lot better than the last bite of every bar, though.
Did you have a moment where, you know, sort of like Sam in the movie, he's like, oh, what food have we got left? Lemba spread. And look, more lemba spread, you know, and they're just feeling really disheartened by it. That's the only thing they have left. Did you kind of have a moment like that?
I think so, a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, it was hard for us to really get into that mindset, only being 3 days out. But we were definitely excited to eat something different when we got to the end. Our friends brought us sandwiches, and it was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, in the parking lot. I think also the last night, so the middle day was my birthday. And so the last night we were in front of this beautiful lake, and kind of sitting up there all alone. Everyone else had left at that point. And we kind of just had like a cheers to my birthday moment. And that the lembas bread being both our dinner and our cake was kind of a moment of like, okay, this is all we got. and this is all we're going to get tomorrow too.
That sounds like the most miserable and the most memorial birthday cake that ever has been eaten, I think, by a man. So kudos to you. That's awesome. In Tolkien's world, the bond between Frodo and Sam is one of like deep trust and friendship. And just talking with you guys, it's clear to see you guys have been friends for a long, long time. How did this journey affect your friendship? Did it mirror sort of the connections that Frodo and Sam have? Were you like tested? Did you get angry with each other at certain points? How was the friendship?
It was easy. I mean, I think I wouldn't ever have done something like this with, well, there's maybe a couple other of our mutual friends who I think could have come along on the journey, but Beppe is definitely the obvious person for me to do it with. And, you know, I think a huge part of our friendship is we're both able to get into this headspace where we've put ourselves in a bad situation where things aren't maybe the most comfortable or great they could be, but we can just kind of like revel in it together and just be like, well, here we are, and this is ridiculous, and, you know, let's just enjoy how ridiculous it is rather than get kind of lost in how uncomfortable we could imagine it is, you know?
Totally. A favorite saying of mine is that suffering alone is really miserable, but suffering with your friends is hilarious within parameters. And I think, you know, with Andrew especially, this might sound a little mean, but it's endlessly entertaining for me when he's uncomfortable. And I think he probably feels the same way for me, and we're able to recognize that, and I'm not offended by it if he's laughing at me when I'm, you know, distressed. I mean, obviously, if I was actually injured, I wouldn't expect that of him, but when I'm just uncomfortable, it's pretty funny.
That's so fun to hear, and I'm just listening, and I'm hearing what you're saying, and there's so many different themes of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings that are going through my mind as you're talking. Like, yeah, suffering alone, that really sucks, but like suffering together, there's a unity, there's a bond that's formed as you do that together. You say you laugh at Andrew's uncomfort. I love that you use that word, like whenever he's feeling uncomfortable, because when you read a book like The Hobbit, you can track how uncomfortable Bilbo is feeling from like the first page to the last page. It's just like this incredible journey of him just so uncomfortable. And we love it. We all are laughing at Bilbo and Andrew when they're feeling uncomfortable. I don't know why that's so fun for us to do that. But Andrew, you also spoke about like sort of just enjoying the journey, right? And sort of a joy and an optimism and a laughter that comes. And that's another theme that comes through Tolkien is, yeah, things are dark, things are heavy, things are desperate, but we can still find joy and be optimistic and have hope for the future. Just so many different themes there. Did you intend to like be like, oh my gosh, we're gonna really connect with Tolkien's works, or was that just sort of the natural way of being out there in nature and thinking about Sam and Frodo and what they had to go through?
I think we set ourselves up to in intentional ways to connect to the characters, you know, by carrying the same gear they had, by mimicking the food that they ate. So there was that, but then there is something about being out there that just felt like, oh, we're really in Middle Earth right now. And we've met multiple groups along the way, because it's a very popular hike we were on, where we'd come around the corner and people would say, we were literally just talking about hobbits, and then the two of you showed up. And we even ran into one group that had the Lothlorien brooches. And they had theirs tucked in their pack, and they were sort of carrying them more symbolically, but they pulled them out and we all got a photo together. And so there is something about the landscape where you just, you know, you kind of like, you really feel like you start in the Shire. It's these grassy hills, and then it gets to this more rugged terrain. And then the last pass, Paintbrush Divide, has this big black peak at the top where the rock kind of changes, and it feels like you're climbing Mordor to some degree.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds like the perfect trail to have sort of an experience out there. And remind me again, the name of the trail is the Teton Crest Trail?
Yeah, the Teton Crest Trail.
Okay, yeah. And did you know that this is the trail that we had? Did you know that right away? Did you research this at all? Or did you just have that in mind, Beppe, when you started kind of forming this idea?
Well, so I live in Jackson. So I'm right next to the Tetons. They're a big playground for me, especially in the summer. I'd never backpacked the Teton Crest Trail, but I had been on it before. Andrew and I moved to Jackson together about 6 winters ago now. And him and his partner have now left, But in that time, Andrew had never, he hasn't really done much in the Tetons in the summer because we were always going and working on the river. And so it kind of was an obvious choice because I knew that people did it as like a 3-day trip. And Andrew and I have spent time in the Tetons together climbing and skiing, but never backpacking or really like there's so many places that he hasn't seen. And so it made a lot of sense to me to do it there, especially because I kind of knew the path. I had run it before. And so it would be, I thought that it would also be fun to slow down and be able to see it. And there's a lot of strategic exits. So if something were to go wrong, you're always like about 8 miles away from a trailhead if you jump out one of the drainages instead of continuing, because the trail kind of goes south to north or north to south, depending on the way you do it. But you can kind of always bail out to the east, depending on where you are.
Yeah, that does sound like a really good choice. Maybe we've touched on this before, but I want to hear from each of you the absolute worst moment that you had while you were out on the trail.
I think for me, it's our first night, and we knew we were going to get some rain on the first day. And for anybody who's been in the mountains, you'll know, but the rain in the mountains, it's not like an all day thing. Typically, normally it comes in these big waves, and we were up high enough, we could see it coming. And so at about midday, we'd get this big wave, we got hail and rain, and then we'd get a break and we'd kind of make some more miles. And then another one would come and we'd take shelter and pull out our pipes and smoke a pipe. And then, it got time to go to bed and we could see these storm clouds still kind of rolling in. And we thought, okay, it's probably going to rain tonight, so we need some sort of shelter. And we found a boulder to sleep under. And that was pretty bad because the ground was just lumpy and kind of like clay. And there was this really thorny bush that had decided to take up residence underneath this boulder. And we used our swords to sort of clear it out of the way, but it was still kind of poking us in the side. But the worst part about it was all night long, these deer kept kind of poking their head into our little hobbit hole, for lack of a better term, and like checking us out. Deer are such skittish creatures, and they just have this like anxiety about them that just permeates who they are, that I kept waking up and they would make me anxious. Like, is something wrong? Why are you checking in on us? And so all night I'm like trying to sleep. I'm so uncomfortable, can barely sleep. I wake up and there's a deer just like skittishly looking around. And there's a lot of grizzly bears in the Tetons. So yes. It's like, are they freaked out because there's a grizzly bear that's coming? And like, all I have is a sting, you know, to defend me.
Yeah, it's hard to not pick a sleep-related moment. I had a moment on the second night when I woke up and I thought for sure it was morning, which I was really excited about because then that meant that warmth would come soon. And we were done with, you know, tossing and turning all night, but it was actually just the moon was super bright. So that one was up there when I just was like, oh, I actually have to keep lying down for a lot longer. But also I think on the last morning, it actually got kind of midday. It was quite warm. And the whole time we were wearing our cloaks, which are pretty thick wool cloaks. And we noticed that, you know, Sam and Frodo, but Sam especially always has his cloak tucked into his backpack. Took some finagling, but actually ended up being kind of a comfortable way to do it, but it was still really warm. And so I was just at the point where I remember like we'd gone over the final pass and we had about 4,000 feet of just descending, probably over 8 miles. And we're just walking and we know that the finish line is coming up. And I think this always happens for me when I'm, you know, if I'm out on a long trail run or whatever the thing is, when I'm in like those last couple miles, all of the pain starts to set in. And I was really just like in my head, like, oh my God, okay, one step at a time. But right then, three of our really good friends surprised us on the trail. And one was dressed up as a wizard and the other two were dressed as elves. And that just brought us.
You say eagles. The eagles are coming.
Yeah,
the eagles
are coming. Well, one of them was going to bring a horse, she later told us, but
that's awesome.
wasn't able to. And that just like brought, it was both like a low point, like literally right before they came and surprised us on the trail. And then it just like brought this second wind and was honestly a total high point for the trip for me.
Wow. That's amazing. There's so much in what both of you just said that that it feels like you got to live Lord of the Rings. Like, you got to, like, Andrew, you're talking about, we couldn't find this place to sleep. It was going to rain. We found this boulder. The ground was lumpy. There were deer. Like, I feel like I'm reading a page of Lord of the Rings right now, just hearing your experience of trying to find a place to sleep. And you're hacking at thorn bushes with your sword. And then Beppe, you're like, oh, yeah, I thought I woke up and I thought it was day. But it was just a really bright moon. I was like, well, yeah, Frodo and Sam had the exact same thing happen to them. They're waking up in the middle of the night thinking it's day, but it's always dark. And there's also a term, and not a lot of Tolkien fans know this, but there's a term that Tolkien created, which he called eucatastrophe. It describes essentially a moment in a story where the characters are at their absolute most desperate low point. Like, they've given up all hope. It's just darkness. Everything's going bad. And there's nothing left that we can do. But then all of a sudden, there's a sudden joyous turn. That's the eucatastrophe, is the sudden joyous turn, where some circumstance changes, somebody shows up, the eagles show up, or you're walking on this trail and you're like, I am just so done with this journey. I'm done eating this grizzly, lembus, calorie-dense food. I don't want to do the last 8 miles. And then boom, all of a sudden, my friends show up and I feel joy. I feel a second wind. Like, you lived and experienced a moment of what Tolkien would call eucatastrophe, a sudden joyous turn. That's amazing. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
That's really cool. Thank you for sharing that.
So those were the worst moments. Mm-hmm. And maybe, Beppe, maybe this counts as one of your best ones. But what was, like, the best moment of this journey?
I mean, that was up there. But I think, like, really the top moment for me, it kind of happened a number of times. But I guess one, like, standout when it really, like, yeah, stands out in my brain. Any time that Andrew got to put his sword on his hip and be wearing a cloak, he just looked so happy. Like, you could just tell that it was fulfilling so many of his lifelong dreams, you know. And then the little kid in Andrew, that, you know, one of the things I really love about Andrew, and I think we immediately connected over, was that he still very much is that kid. And he's a very mature, thoughtful person as well, but he can connect with the little kid in him really quickly. And we were on top of Hurricane Pass, Hurricane Divide, which, as the name implies, it's quite windy up there. And we both took our packs off and our cloaks were just billowing in the wind. And Andrew just looked so a part of the landscape, and it just, he just looked so content that it made me really happy as someone that loves him.
Oh, that's amazing. Andrew, you sound like a hobbit.
I think I could have done all right as a hobbit.
What was the best moment for you, Andrew?
I mean, there's so many. Like, we talk a lot about how bad the sleeping was, but honestly, the majority of the trip was just actually so fun. And I, for anybody who's a backpacker, like, I cannot recommend the Teton Crest Trail enough. It is so beautiful the entire time. You walk the entire length of the Tetons, basically, and so you're just seeing the most amazing mountains and scenery. But I have to say, like, I agree with Beppe. I think Hurricane Pass was the peak moment for me. It was right smack dab in the middle of Beppe's birthday. And, you know, we lived together for a long time, but we don't live together anymore. And so getting to share his birthday with him while really doing this thing that I felt like celebrated so many aspects of our friendship together was just a really special moment. And when you climb Hurricane Pass, not only is it windy, but you are smack dab in front of the Grand Teton. Mm-hmm. And we, like, hiked down from Hurricane Pass and had lunch on this really nice boulder just at the base of, you know, one of the most famous mountains in the world. And we both rock climb, and Beppe's climbed the Grand Teton a whole bunch of times. And we just sat on the boulder and he pointed out all the routes to me that he's done or would like to do. And we're just sitting below this beautiful glacier. And it was just like a really special moment to share with a friend. And it would have been had we been wearing Gore-Tex or wool. But definitely made better by the fact that I got to wear a sword. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, wearing a sword and a cloak on Hurricane Pass, that makes everything better, for sure, for sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think it's so interesting for both of you, your highlights were not about yourself, but it was about your friend, right? For each of you, that you both could see the joy on your friend's face. I think that is exactly what Tolkien, I think that would really warm his heart to be like, yeah, a couple of guys out in nature being friends and having joy together and caring for one another. I think that's totally definitely in line, I think, with what Tolkien's works and are trying to inspire us to do. It's been a few months.
I just have to say, I really agree with that. And I think that's something we talked a lot about on the trail, was just how at the end of the day, you know, I think there's often this debate about who's the hero of the Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Is it Frodo? Is it Sam? You know, maybe somebody would argue it's somebody else. I think it's one of the brilliant things about the story is that the person you think is the hero the whole time, who you think is the main character, in many ways isn't the hero, but in so many ways is. And the conclusion I really came to after doing this and just sitting in it for 3 days and thinking about it is I think the hero of the journey is the friendship between the two of them. Like, it would never have happened without both of them. And so you can't say one is better than the other. It was their mutual collaboration that made it possible. And that's just such a powerful message for anybody who, you know, works with somebody else in any capacity. I think that, like, you are a true collaboration is always going to be stronger than the sum of its parts.
And then the forces of evil in any world.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I love that you say that, and you know, we maybe giggle a little bit because maybe it sounds a little bit corny, but I think it's true. I think it's definitely true. And Andrew, to your point, I've kind of always leaned on the side of like Team Sam, you know, like Team Sam's the hero. Frodo wouldn't have gotten far without Sam. Even me saying that just doesn't feel quite right. Doesn't ring quite true. Like, sure, there's evidence for it, but I love how you say, no, the real hero here is the friendship. It's the collaboration. It's the joining together of these two people. And literally by extension, everybody else, right? Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli and Gandalf, all of these people who probably would still be in their own little spaces, but yet they've come out of that to join together and collaborate and have friendship together to overcome the forces of evil that present themselves. I think that's just a beautiful, beautiful thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's why the stories are powerful and timeless, and why so many people even now continue to connect with them.
Yeah,
definitely.
If we could raise Tolkien from the dead and put him right here in front of both of you, what would each of you like to say to Tolkien about this journey that you just went on together?
Man, I mean, I think I would say thank you first, because not only I think have the stories brought myself and so many other people so much joy, but also it's been kind of a big part of Andrew and my friendship. And I think something that we've bonded over multiple times. Andrew actually got married this summer, and part of how he asked me to be his best man and for the rest of the, I guess, groomsmen to be his groomsmen was through a really awesome kind of puzzle that was centered around Lord of the Rings as well. And so I think, yeah, I would just want to express my gratitude and also, you know, ask him why he didn't let Sam have hip straps.
Yeah, no hip straps on those backpacks. I have gone backpacking before, and even I carry like this inflatable paddleboard to the beach, and even that thing has waist straps. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, it definitely would have been something along the same vein of like, okay, maybe their equipment was pretty, you know, basic, but then they go to Lothlorien, and you're telling me Galadriel didn't look at those backpacks and say, hey, buddy, I've got the thing for you. You got a long journey ahead of you. Here's a sleeping bag. We have those here, or like some magical elven equivalent, because there's no way that you've been getting good sleep. Yeah, exactly. Backpacking is so expensive in Middle Earth. Yeah, I think something, I mean, that's really like another thing we talked about so much, especially in preparation, was the gear. Like, we really we've received a lot of flack on the internet for not having the right gear. And I take a little bit of offense to it just because we put a lot of thought into it. And I think we're about as accurate as you could be to the actual gear that they would wear without putting yourself in danger, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
agree. And so I think that I would have questions for Tolkien about, like, well, what was the full packing list that they actually had? How did it change throughout their journey? You know, I know in the movies, Sam has the cast iron on the outside of his pack, which is, I think, clearly an aesthetic choice. But, you know, how would he have packed his bag? Those sorts of things. Why didn't they ever ask Gollum to carry anything? There's some little, like, logistical pieces that don't make a lot of sense to me. And so I would just ask if I would be curious if he had thought through any of that, or if it was just sort of like, you know, it's mostly not about that. So no, I didn't think about it.
My guess is if you were to ask Tolkien that, you and he would have an amazing 10-hour conversation about all of those details. Because for him, for Tolkien, those details mattered. And the reason they mattered was because that is what gave the story depth and a feeling of historicity or an inner consistency of reality, right? It feels like it's actual history because we're thinking through those details. And he probably would have been like, Andrew, you're right. Why not waist straps or a mithril pod or whatever? You know, like he would have loved just having that thought exercise of like, how do they actually pack their gear? And what is the actual packing list? I think he would have loved that conversation.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that exact thing was also a motivating factor in doing this, was the question of, okay, obviously, like, Andrew and I aren't going to be able to tell if a journey to Mordor to destroy the one true ring is possible, but we can find out if the way that they went through their day-to-day is possible. And that was kind of like, okay, based on what we can figure out and determine that they had, is it possible for us to, like, go any amount of time with this gear? And you can do 3 days. I'm sure you could do longer, but it would be rough.
3 days sounds sufficient. That sounds sufficient to me. Well, let's wrap this up. There's a line from Gandalf in the Hobbit films, and it's actually not in the books, but I think it's rather fitting when the dwarves have sort of talked to Bilbo and they're trying to get him to go on their journey, and he's kind of sitting there in his living room at Bag End, and Gandalf's like, hey, Bilbo, the world is out there. It's not in your books. It's not in your maps. It's not here in your own little living room. Like, the adventure that you need to have is outside. It's out there. And I kind of always love that because it is really fitting for Gandalf to say something like that to Bilbo the Hobbit. But it's also really fitting for us in our own modern world to be like, oh, yeah, we can sit in our own comforts. I'm sitting on a really soft, comfortable chair. I've got the AC going. I got a Dr. Pepper in my hand. Like, I'm feeling totally comfortable talking about Lord of the Rings. But, like, adventure, it's outside and it's out there. And I just want to commend the both of you for taking that seriously. And I know you had a lot of fun and you kind of thought, yeah, maybe it's a little bit ridiculous, but you took it seriously. You took your gear list seriously, the experience, you had the intention, the heart going into it. And you went out there and you had an adventure. And it strengthened your friendship. And I just think it's really inspiring to me the way that you took Tolkien's world, Sam and Frodo, two of his characters, and you were like, how do we experience this for ourselves and then share that with the rest of the world? So I commend both of you and I thank both of you. And I was just really inspired by your little ridiculous adventure, as you call it. But I just thought it was amazing.
Well, thank you. I think we're both really happy that people have been able to find joy in what we did as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you, you having us on and taking the time to ask us about it, because hopefully somebody will hear about this through your podcast and, you know, decide to at least go for a walk, but, you know, maybe somebody will recreate this journey or do it even better than we did. And that would be an awesome thing to see.
Yeah, do it somewhere with softer dirt where you can go barefoot, you know?
All right. Well, Andrew and Beppe, thank you for wandering Middle Earth with me, and thank you for getting out there and having an adventure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.